I'd like to introduce our panel, Priscilla Bassett, librarian at New Lincoln School, on my extreme left. Mr. Major R. Owens, the branch librarian in the Brooklyn branch of the Brooklyn Public Library. Mrs. Eva Epstein, librarian in the curriculum reading room at Teachers College Library. And Mrs. Urbanowitz, who is chairman of our parent committee on the Nancy Block Award. Mr. James Higgins, who is a librarian at Levittown, and Mrs. Ann Wolf, who was one of the people that helped us really get on our feet with this award in the early years. Mr. Owens made a quick survey of how some of these books are doing in the public library, and we'd like to start out by hearing from him.
I was disappointed that there were so few books this year to consider for the award, and I decided, in addition to making this quick survey, to check a few other pertinent aspects of publishing for children that might answer the question why there are not more books published in the area of intergroup relations. The first and most significant fact, I thought, was the fact that last year there was a big increase in the number of books published for children. There were about 2,500 books published last year, which is more than a 50% increase over the previous year. Now, despite the fact that there was more than a 50% increase over the previous year, when it came to considering books for the award, I am not sure, but I think there were fewer books this year than there were last year. I think there were fewer bad books, as well as fewer good books on the subject. Now, it seems to me that publishers are first of all businessmen, and in attempting to answer the question as to why they are not publishing more in this area, I thought that perhaps many were laboring under the misconception that books in this area can be sold only to a special clientele, and that they'd have to have special promotion features and limited sales at that. I think there might have been some truth in this misconception about 10 or 15 years ago, but for some years now I think things have been changing, and today I'm sure that there's a demand for books in this area, probably an extraordinary demand, and not only when I talk to librarians and to some teachers that I happen to know, as well as from observing the way teachers' assignments go, I knew that there was a demand as far as the teachers were concerned. I decided to check and see just what sort of choices the children were making when they go into a library and select a book on their own without having necessarily been assigned the book, or without, just for recreational reading. I selected seven branches in the Brooklyn Public Library for this purpose. It was just a quick survey. I made up a little form on memo and sent it around. And of course, there were seven branches, and three of the branches were located in predominantly Negro neighborhoods. The other four were definitely in predominantly white middle-class neighborhoods. As expected, most of the books that I had on the list, which I'll read in a minute, they are books which have appeared in previous years on the Nancy Block Award list, and some books which appear this year as recommended. All of those books, in fact, in the Negro neighborhoods are very popular, and this is as to be expected. But in addition to that, I found that in the four branches serving predominantly white clientele, the books were equally as popular. In fact, in some cases, more of them were popular. And I think this is very significant. Publishers should take note of it. Some of the books I selected happened to be Two is a Team, Bartow Takes the Subway, Mary Jane, The Swimming Hole, Look at Your Eyes, The Snowy Day, Looking for Orlando. Now, Bartow Takes the Subway was on our list last year, and that was reported as being popular, not very popular. And I happen to know one reason why it has this year become popular instead of being very, very popular, and that is the publisher put it out in a new edition, and he halved the size of the book. The book is now half as large as it was last year, and the book's basic value was the real aesthetic value was the beauty of the photographs. Now the photographs have been halved and the book has lost, I'm sure, much of its appeal for children as well as adults. But the very fact that the publisher brought the book out in a second edition shows that it was a successful venture as far as publishing is concerned. The most popular book in both instances was Two is a Team, which I don't know whether or not it has appeared on the Nancy Block list, but it is very popular in all of the branches of Brooklyn. And this particular book, it seems to me, has nothing special to offer as far as the story is concerned. It's a very simple, average book. The text, the story is of two boys who were friends. They had a quarrel, and as a result of the quarrel, they got into difficulty. Then they came together to make up the damage that they had incurred while they were fighting. And the basic difference in this little story is the fact that one boy is Negro and one is white. And this is clear to be seen from the cover of the book. I have watched children come in and notice the cover of this book and immediately head for it. They want it immediately. There's something which interests them a great deal, the very chemistry of the cover. And I think publishers should take note of this fact. Here is a book, Two as a Team, I think, which was published several years ago and obviously has gone through several printings and is still very popular. It is ordered for replacement orders, and I can't see how it isn't making money for some publisher. So I think that they should definitely take note of this and of the fact that all the other books which are on this list were also very popular, including Look at Your Eyes and The Snowy Day, which came out this year. And The Snowy Day, of course, being a new book, it ranks first in popularity now. But I think the fact that Two as a Team has endured is quite significant also.
By the way, I think Two as a Team came out before we started our awards. To accentuate the positive, I'm going to ask Mrs. Epstein to just introduce the books that we recommended this year.
Actually, let me say first that we, I think, all agreed that not a single book really lived up to getting an award, and for various reasons. Let me just mention the titles and a short summary of the contents and then explain it with each individual book. Have you got your list already? Well, not yet.
No.
The first we listed here is Time for Tenderness, which is a book for teenager. Now, we all felt that the problem was really one of the most important ones because it gave this conflict of a girl who lives in South America between the way she was brought up in the American South and she...
Excuse me, can you hear?
And her falling in love with a native of that country who has some Negro blood. If that story actually for the plot would have deserved a prize and an award, but we found that the story was not written well enough, that it was not probed deeply into the problem to really get an award. This book really should have been written on a more adult level to deserve an award. Look at Your Eyes, which is right in front of me, is actually a book on science which explains more the scientific fact. The fact that this little boy who is looking at the other people is a Negro boy does not alone justify giving it an award. As a matter of fact, I personally think these books which have as their characters minority groups for young children, that is a wonderful fact that more of those books have come out, like Bartow Takes the Subway or the new Ed's book, Orlando and the Wind, which is a little Mexican book, and of course A Snowy Day. But I feel this should be actually so natural that in the day of today, the children are not white children. And interestingly enough, most of those books are written for young children and children who are not yet aware of the difference, or if so, only if it's pointed out to them. But very few books in the class from 8 to 12 years have that as a subject. That is a snowy day. You probably, most of you have seen it, won the Caldecott Award, and rightly so, because it's one of the most charming illustrations with this little Negro boy in the snow. But again, it was not actually focused on the race relations or human relations, and that's why we couldn't give it an award, aside from the fact that it got the Caldecott already.
Incidentally, Mr. Keats, the artist, is here. Would he please stand?
Understanding Kim, again, presents a very interesting problem. A little Korean girl is adopted by a family, and parts of it are very well written and very realistic. But again, it didn't quite hit it off. Some of the parts are artificial, the end is very bad, and it is not, again, going deeply enough into what it should be. Not on the list, but added to the list will be a very interesting book, a biography actually, on Chief Joseph, War Chief of the Nez Perce, by Russell Davis and Asher Brenner. This is a story of Chief Joseph, and the interesting part about it, that Indian who actually was one of the most peace-loving people was forced into a war. That is really beautifully written, and not only the historical background, but also the characterization of the man. Again, it was not quite what the award is meant for, so unfortunately we couldn't give that the award, but I think it's one of the best books. The fact is that quite a few books have come out which talk about race problem and human relations, but they are not set in the United States. I don't know whether you have come across a few books that have been translated from European language, some a Norwegian book about a little girl who finds a brother in North Africa, which are very well written, but again, it doesn't meet the requirements because it's not set in the States. And these are written, interestingly enough, by European authors and not American authors.
May I add at this point that we have set this as one of the criteria that the locale be the United States, and it involve children here, not for any judgment on the other books, but simply because we felt that this is about what we could cope with in terms of our facilities for finding the books and judging them. And certainly there's a place for an award perhaps for the other types of books, but we just simply, for convenience, set our boundaries at a particular place. We thought that we'd like to move on in this round table to a discussion of standards. What are the standards by which we have been judging these books, and perhaps some examples of some of the best books that we've had in mind. I like to throw the floor open now to a discussion of what makes a book a good book in this category.
Well, perhaps I could start that, because I initially see these books. Mrs. Foreman and I go over long lists of which books are being published which might meet the requirements of the award at the beginning of the year, and we write to the various publishers and ask them if they would be kind enough to send us a copy, and always they do this. And you might be interested to know that we get somewhere around 50 books consider. Sometimes it's a little more, sometimes it's a little less. Last year, when I initially started reading for the award, I was quite uncertain just what was wanted. But in the reading itself, I think you begin to come upon certain standards which apply pretty much to any book, basically. One is that the style not be pedestrian, that the treatment of the characters is not stock or standard, that you have a feeling that the situations which are presented in honesty and integrity and with some kind of insight which seems new. That is, in any book that you read, there are certain standard situations that are going to come up, but it's the author's way of looking at it which holds our interest. Then parents, various parents in the school, are called upon as readers, and they write a report. And on the basis of this report, we pass the books along to the judges, who, I must say, this year have been absolutely wonderful because they've been reading all the while. The parents have been reading too and making suggestions of their own. And I would say there are about 10 or 12, 15 books that go for the award, would you?
At least.
Mm-hmm. And then the books circulate and we meet and discuss it. This year we couldn't find one that we felt lived up to last year's award, which was to a very fine book called Antelope Singer. And this had a magnificent presentation, and the theme itself was beautifully done. I think this is one thing that prejudiced me. I couldn't find anything that I liked.
Well, let's go into that a bit and more into detail. Why was this a good book? Perhaps you'd better tell a little bit about the story and acquaint people with it. Do you want to?
Oh, Antelope Singer.
Yeah.
Well, Antelope Singer was a very interesting book because it was about a maimed Indian boy. He had a withered arm, and he had been rejected originally by his parents and taken by his grandfather, and he had been left as the tribe moved because he had measles and was dying. Stop me if I get the plot somewhat wrong. And he is picked up by a white family and adopted, or they nurse him back to health. And they themselves are on their way west, and they have to leave the main body of the party they're with. And they winter with the Indians. The grandfather and a group of people come back and take them. And in the description of the customs of the people, it was done with great fidelity and most interesting. And the boy himself is at the same time learning to find a place in the tribe. As a child who is maimed, he is an outsider in his own tribe. And he does find this in the end. He learns to sing, to call the antelope when they come. And the story really shows the integration of the Indian boy into his own world and shows there's a comparable white boy of the same age, shows the relationship and the interweaving of the Indian and white society, and this parallel thing was very well done. The writing was of extreme distinction. It was very, very fine. And I just didn't feel there was a book this year that came anywhere near it.
And among the white people, there were a range of attitudes, isn't that right, towards
yes.
the Indian?
But they were at the same time completely dependent upon the Indians. They were in a terrain, I guess it would be the desert practically, the edges of the desert, in which there was no form of food or water visible to the children from Boston or their parents. And yet to the Indians, who seemingly had such a low cultural level, there was food, there was a way of maintaining life. I found it interesting in this also that the relationship between the white children and their parents was so clearly drawn. The parents were dependent upon the children to interpret the Indian society to them and the Indians' ways of survival. And at the end, when the family returned to the wagon train and headed further west, they had to go back to the old relationships of mother and child and father and son, and yet there was a substantial difference because the children had led the way in that family, and now, of course, they did go back to the old patterns, but they carried the fruits of this other relationship.
I wonder how popular is this book with children. Do you have to push it, or do children read it on their own?
Well, I found that children who are interested in Indians will take this willingly. Now, whether it's an introductory kind of book, I think you mentioned that this sits on the shelves in Brooklyn, doesn't it?
Yes. I've had complaints from children's librarians who say, this is an assignment book. This is the sort of book that teachers will assign to children if they know about it, and the librarians themselves push the book. However, children themselves don't care for it as a matter of recreational reading. This is no great criticism, I think, because we actually need many more pace setters like this that are good, so we say, for school assignments, and the children can see a really terrific. I think what I thought was most terrific about the book was the fact that we are looking for books which show the positive values of differences, and this book at every turn did this in every respect. And when it came to survival in the wilderness, the differences between the two groups, each had something to offer. And when it came to actually the customs and traditions of both groups, each group had something to offer. And it certainly depicted very well the customs and traditions, a very poetic tradition of the Indian tribe, which is treated there. I thought it was sort of an ultimate book as far as a book emphasizing the positive value of differences. Is concerned.
We have a teacher in the audience.
I think some of the problem in the popularity of the book may be that I think as far as reading level, it might appeal more to a child of 9 or 10, and it may have been pushed with the 8-year-olds who usually study life of the Indian people. And I know I'm a third grade teacher who teaches the life of the Indian people, and it was only a few of the children in my group last year who could read it. Children who were really advanced readers.
It's much too adult for that age.
And that may be the problem, that teachers have been pushing it.
We have, just to give you the inner life of our judge group here, we had our little intergroup relations between those who saw this problem more from the point of view of the classroom assignment and the librarian, and the general book that a child will pick up because he wants to pick it up. And I think Mrs. Wolf, who always brought this point out for us. Would you like to say something on this point?
Well, I think there's always the difficulty of wondering whether a child is going to read the book or whether this is a book we think is good for him. I would suspect that of the 2,000-some books that come out every year, that a good hunk of them never really reach children's hands. I have a feeling that the parents buy it and aunts buy them for gifts and stuff like that, and they sit on the shelf and gather lots of dust. And I think this will probably always continue to go on this way. I take a rather jaundiced view of some of the award books generally, and although what I say I hope you will not take to be critical of some of the very fine books that do come out. We have books in waves. I've been following the children's books now for about 14 years, and over every year I would say that I read something in the neighborhood of 700 to 1,000 books. And you get waves of this stuff. There are periods of 2 or 3 years when books on Japan just absolutely nauseate you. At the end of 2 years, you know how to build a paper house and how to paint and how to do everything that the Japanese do. For a long period of time, it was the American Indian. And we knew everything about the American Indian, his culture, how he builds teepees, how he makes hogans, how he does all sorts of things like that. But I really wonder whether these kinds of books, great as they are, help a child relate to the kid on the block. And I doubt it very much. I think there is a great difference between understanding a culture, having a feeling for a foreign land, and having to confront oneself with the situation in which one lives. And this is what I think are the books that are crying to be written. We have, we're in a craze now with children's books, children of foreign lands, or that's what, you know, we call them sort of as a generic term. Every publisher has series of books, My Village in Ghana, My Village in India, My Village in something else. Or then you get children from this country and children from that country. My shelves in the office are just filled with books on every country in the world. But I don't think that a child who reads this book gets anything else except some very specific and maybe some very dull facts. about what happens in other lands. Somehow I think that an award to be meaningful and a book today to be meaningful has got to illuminate the period in which we live. And unfortunately, these books are not being written. If I were to try and choose subjects that I would like to have treated, poverty. Poverty is always something that happens in another country. It rarely happens in America. War and peace. Well, the number of books that have even attempted to deal with the World War II situation and aftermath, you could count on the fingers of one hand. There have been several translated from German that are ghastly books, and I am in the process of writing to editors and publishers, because every year I get on a horse about some subject, and the subject I'm on now is the way World War II has been treated. There are books about the Puerto Ricans. I think in the last 4 years there have been three books that attempted to deal with Puerto Rican children who come to America, to the mainland of America, and try to take up their lives here. There is very little of that. And as far as the Negro-white situation is concerned, here too, we have taken, we've looked at the books around the Civil War, and there must be hundreds of them that deal with the Underground Railroad and Harriet Tubman, and I could give you a list of easily 75, but nothing about, or maybe in the last 5 years, about three books that dealt with an attempt to integrate the schools in the South. Now, it's almost as if the authors, I've always said, sort of tipped their hats to the whole question of race relations, but put it back 100 years, because it's too difficult to deal with the situation today. Now, there's been a great deal of movement on the part of educators around textbooks. And several efforts are being made at Bank Street in the Detroit school system to get readers, new readers. I see that the Detroit system has also done something on the teaching of history around the Civil War. But I think that nobody has ever really pressured the editors and the publishers about books that are being written for children today. I would not agree with Mr. Owens that bad books are fewer. I have found in the past 2 years several that are ghastly. One published by a very reputable publisher that has a stereotype of a Jew that I didn't think existed anymore, published in 1962. The editor of the publishing house, when I brought this to her attention, said I was oversensitive and looking for stuff. Well, I pointed out to her that Jews are oversensitive when they're stereotyped, and Negroes are oversensitive when they're stereotyped, and so forth and so on. But I think you find a great deal of this, and incidentally, this book was very highly, the American Library Association recommended it, New York Times book review section gave it a very elegant review. But I think these people do not look for the kind of thing that the Nancy Block Award has tried to find. And I think that part of our job here is to put a little pressure on the publishers to get some of these books that have to be written done and within the period of our children's generation.
How about putting the pressure on the writers?
Yeah, I was going to say, has any attempt been made to stimulate the writing, for instance, amongst senior teachers in training as an assignment, or even suggesting it to the university that a manuscript be submitted?
May I come in there? I find so often that if a teacher sits down and wants to write a book and wants to give a message, he might try to put a message across, but it is not a good literary work.
Well, that's why I included universities too, whether it could go open to almost anyone.
I think in the schools, the question that the lady raised from the audience, and I think it's in the schools, in our teaching, I think it's as we look at these kind of books in particular, perhaps, we are kind of in a sociological base. And that's the way we send children to books. A book like Mary Jane will have in the library on the cards themselves might have race problems or will have things. They won't have there is no such thing as meanness. A kid, if you ask a kid about a book about meanness, they can talk to you about meanness and about these kind of spiritual things. And this, to me, is what literature is. And we don't have a proper, I feel, in the schools, most teachers that I know are not, in the elementary grades, are not literarily based when they send children to books. We go to the Antelope Singer when we're looking for a book on Indians. We go to a Mary Jane when we're looking for a book on Negroes. What I want kids to come to look for books and look into books is that to meet people, whether they be fictional or whether they be real, and that there are people involved in these situations. Too many of these books, and I think that's where most of them fall short, are preachy books. People have come with the problem. A book has to be written. We don't have where I would think we would have to reach out let me just hold for a minute and say that I think there are two kinds of books that are contributing. The problem book and then the popular book. And Beam's book on Two as a Team, I think we should be flooding the market with more of these. But I don't think there are as many good writers around as that can tackle a problem like Mary Jane. And I'd rather see the good ones do it and come through with the basic theme is on a human level, on a spiritual level. And I think if the writer isn't able to get in underneath there and bring forth this, you get a social tract rather than a good piece of literature. And we teachers sometimes like the good social tract because it very clearly states what we want to be stated. Whereas the spiritual book is the book that the kid can mull around with at home, that will hit the kid whether his parents are prejudiced or not, that he can be alone with and meet another person, probably maybe never to be able to express it verbally with anybody else. But then I think our job in the classrooms perhaps is to talk around. You can get a conversation from, they now have William Shirer's book in the Landmark, and I get a little disturbed when boys want to talk about the rise and fall of Adolf Hitler. Because to me they're motivated in a different way, and this is when this whole theme of meanness came up. I used it to get away from that book because I don't think it's a good book to talk about with kids until they really get involved in it themselves. We ended up with a book, Ellen Tebbit's, which is far removed. It's a comedy to you and I, but there's little pieces of meanness where the kid sees that, yes, I've been mean myself, and my mother's been mean. We've all been mean. And every little mean act in this world contributes to the rise and fall of Adolf Hitler. And I think this way we have to kind of get kids really looking at books at I call it a spiritual level.
Anything further on the standards that we want for these books?
Well, I think that many of the books that we've looked at rise and fall on. Well, the author may set a scene and then be unable to resolve it. And then we have a situation as we did in Understanding Kim, I think, was one of the books that we did not feel deserved an award because there had to be some catastrophe in order to resolve things. Now, the thing that stands out to my mind about Mary Jane is there was no great catastrophe. I mean, we could go through many of the books. There's an old book that I just reread today called Lady Cake Farm. I thought, well, maybe I ought to take another look. And there had to be a cyclone in there. I mean, there always has to be some violent eruption to make people change. And unfortunately, sometimes they do change this way, but lots of them don't. I think that perhaps this is one of the qualities, the ability to write a book about a problem and not, I mean, you almost have to have lived with this, perhaps, or have a tremendous amount of insight not to resort to the old hackneyed deus ex machina or whatever.
Well, this sounds to me as though this person is just a poor writer. And maybe one of our problems is that this subject does not attract the outstanding writers. Is this part of it?
I don't think that really is true. I think that they're guided very much by the business interests of the publishers. Mm-hmm. And I have had any number of editors say to me, we're not going to make money on a book like this. And although we think this is a great idea, we just can't get it published because they won't buy it in the South and it won't go on any reading list in Southern schools. And this is part of our problem.
Yes.
That ties up with what you said before about all the dull books or Let's Visit the Country, because this is a subject which sells beautifully, because every school teacher has to use it in their unit in a certain class. I mean, we see that they are just never on the shelves for that reason, and of course that is a selling point on those books.
Mrs. Wolf, I'd like to ask you, are there any readers and primers that are available with illustrations other than Anglo-Saxon children on nice picket fence streets?
Yes, there are now two. One that I haven't yet seen, but I understand is about to be published, that is was prepared by the Bank Street School and is going to be published by Macmillan. One that is currently being used is published by Follett and is now being used in the Detroit school system. Those are the only two readers that I know of.
Wasn't the Follett book written by the teachers and the
Yeah, no, it was not written by them. It was written by someone that they hired, but was sort of guided by the teachers in the school.
I have a question. You know, I don't really know who are the good children's writers. I'm thinking of the middle years from 8 to 12 or 9 to 13. I have the horrible suspicion that there aren't any, because I have read tons and tons of garbage since my child, you know, is someplace in that age bracket. And we finally arrived at the place where she's too young for adult fiction and too old for children's fiction. There's a huge no man's land at beginning adolescence, which is one of the most important times for helping in this very spiritual kind of way that this gentleman was talking about. And it's a vast wilderness. I go back to my original question, where are children's writers generally for the older children?
There aren't any. Well, you're quite right. There are many good ones for the age, first of all for the picture book age, and then for the younger children, I say up to 9 or 10 years, and I wouldn't say they're the ones of the last 3-4 years, but before there are some real excellent ones. I mean, you just think of the Wilder books, you think of some of the Estes books and so forth. But when you come to the 12-year-old, these teenage, so-called teenage novels also, I think could be skipped. But I have the suspicion we underestimate children. Can't we give those 12-year-olds who are so sophisticated in these days, why can't they read, for instance, To Kill a Mockingbird? Why can't
Thank
they?
You.
Yes, I mean, why can't, yeah. And why can't we push this kind of thing with a 12, 13-year-olds, as there are some excellent writers of adult books in those areas.
Yes?
Isn't it true that as far as the publisher is concerned, the book is before anything else, a piece of merchandise? And as a piece of merchandise, it's a market to be distributed to younger children, primarily the gift. I think it ceases to be attractive. The gift, however, as the child gets to the age that this lady is talking about, and it probably doesn't have enough attractiveness on its own to succeed based on the child buying it for himself or herself. So that you're back to the point that someone made a minute ago about what the publisher's attitude is.
I think it may be rather unfair for the publisher.
I do too.
I know of many who aren't quite.
But they have to get a good book in order to publish it.
Well, how do they get them? Does a publisher tend to approach an author when you are trying to get a book written for a specific age group? This is to a certain extent an expert's job, particularly when they're readers in school. This is an expert's job. Does a publisher say, would you write a book? Or does a writer write a book and take it to a publisher? Which way does it usually work in the children's book?
Follett is one publisher that I know that has awards for books. One of the finest books, giving background of a religious family, is An All of a Kind Family, which won either the first or was one of the first winners of the Follett Award, which you see, and the wonderful part about how it got written, I think, is good, that the woman who wrote it wrote about her own childhood. She didn't write a book to have other kids learn about the Jewish community. And this book comes through so beautifully of what it was like to be a Jewish girl growing up in early 1900 in New York City. One of the most beautiful books for me to have read with a religious, giving me insight into what I want to know, not technical things about the Jewish religion, but what does this religion mean to these people? And what kind of the whole family life, where I can identify from outside, I can identify in. And I think the important thing that book was in the way it was written, because now other people came along. I happen to be an Irish Catholic, and they did later an Irish Catholic book that didn't quite come off. It won the award, I believe, but it's called The O'Donnells. But to me, it was a carbon copy of the All of a Kind Family, but it wasn't the same. It wasn't literature. It was this person's, I suspect, saw this book and copied it and said, well, here's a good idea.
Or this may answer your question. The first book may have been written by inner compulsion, and the second one, the publisher may have gone out and signed. If you find something that's good, you tend to try and capitalize on it. So I think we would have to say that certainly publishers assign books. Also, books are written by authors who must write them.
Two hands up over here. Yes?
I have to address the question, coming back to the specific problem of the standards for the award. I know two of the books that we're talking about, Snowy Day and Tenderness, and it seems to me that an award that chooses between two books, like this or that, or has that, runs that gamut, very clearly define what it is they're trying to give an award for. Now, for instance, on the realm of the spiritual thing that you were talking about, and the kind of the meanness or whatever, the opposite would be delight, say. The Snowy Day is to me such a direct emotional contact with a preschool child, of course, that it's just marvelous. To me, it was a perfectly beautiful book. It didn't need a message, it didn't need preachiness, it was self-evident. And in that category, it was absolutely perfect. On the other hand, something like Consequentness was very clearly a long, drawn-out, exposed, worked-out problem, which, by the way, didn't really resolve. It just snuck away. But anyway, regardless of the resolution of the book, it's a completely different thing. And I wonder, you're talking about beautiful writing, and for the older child, that's very important, and more of this explanation or exposition is necessary, and I think logical and realistic conclusions have to come to also. But still, it seems to me unfair. If you're talking that way, then you have to immediately eliminate the Snowy Day. Now, it may, you spoke about it before, Mr. Sipson, and I didn't catch what you said about why, or did you say why,
yeah,
the Snowy Day was rejected. Is it simply because it did not go into the problem?
Yeah.
But that's sort of like saying you don't give a prize for music to chamber music to a quartet because it isn't symphony.
No, you're quite right that I see your point. I thought that when the standards were set up, they really want a book which is focused on some human interrelation. And see, that is not the case. There's no interrelation in that book.
Yeah.
And that is, I think, that's where it fails. I mean, doesn't fail because it's beautiful in itself, but it doesn't meet the requirements of that award.
That was the white child reads.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Doesn't
the
interaction
look,
must be grown white, or must be carried
right.
This same problem came up last year, I think, with Bartow.
Yeah.
Yes, it did.
And it is a good point. We did acknowledge that, especially in my community on Long Island, I found a book like Bartow to be very valuable to a white child living in a, let's say, a low middle class community, looking at a different culture as strange to him, perhaps, or as strange to a Midwesterner as a foreign country. I don't think we're denying the value of the book and that these books have tremendous value. But when we discussed it, there was the problem of the intergroup in the book itself. Not that the reader doesn't bring something with him, but that the book itself, because there are many other books deserving, or I think in the past years have been deserving on this basis too. So I think that it has to be clear that there's a big difference between why A Time for Tenderness was turned down and why A Snowy Day and the other book, the informational book. Informational books also, we'd have to take another look at. I think that's another phase perhaps we haven't touched on too much. I didn't get the title. Look at your eyes. And I think these kind of books also would fall into this category, and perhaps this is something that we have to talk out.
Sure. No, I think you're missing the point. We are not saying that but you see, we are not saying that anything has to be done. We're saying this is a fine book, and and we included it on our list, and we said bravo. But we happen to be looking for another type of book to encourage. This is something important, and we certainly want to encourage that. But the basic thing that we are trying to encourage is a book that has within its content an interrelationship. Now, and we don't say that everything that doesn't have this is ineffective or is not good or anything like that. We're just saying that this is what we're looking for, because we want to narrow down the job we want to do, so perhaps we can do it a little more effectively. Yes? That's right. That's right. We recognize that it exists, but this isn't what we set out to do. Just as we did not set out to do anything about textbooks, another very, very important field, and something where something needs to be done, and people need to push. But we don't say one is more important than the other. We just say that these are different jobs. Yes?
I'm just wondering, I haven't seen that book, but I was wondering for future years if there shouldn't be a different definition of the goals for preschool books than for, you know, age level goals, and that if the nursery staff couldn't take the books that are preschool books ahead of time, read them and try them out and come back with suggestions, because my guess, just in the glance, is that this might be doing just what you want at age level. And that there should be a reevaluation, that preschool is quite different from what you'd want.
You mean to say that, I'm sorry, you go ahead.
Well,
I've been monopolizing
you. I work with young children, and I feel, as a matter of fact, in discussion, we have sort of said that books for the preschool child divide themselves into two groups, those which without any mention present Negro children, perhaps together with white children, but in a situation where every child can identify. And then again, there's another category, that of the problem book, and they're very few and far between. Tu's a Teen has problems in it, and I think it does have a special character. You say that, Mr. Owens, that it's not particularly distinguished by its story, but I think there's more interpersonal violence in the relation between the two little boys than in most preschool books, because they do have a very strong fight. But anyway, Swimming Hole is the book which comes to my mind that hits head-on the problem of color prejudice for the young child. It's in picture book format. It's really, I use it very sparingly when I use it with a group, but I feel that by and large, the most desirable book for the preschool child is this book, without comment, and this book, which has, and there have been several of these. Tony's Birds came out last year, and this one is a lovely one because there's no question at all. That book was an easy-to-read book, which you had to sort of look twice to see was it really a Negro child. But here, very beautiful illustrations, and I feel that the award should be much more explicit in this division because, just one more thing, Snowy Day is a gem. It's in my estimation perfect. It doesn't fall short in anything. It achieves its goal perfectly, whereas Time for Tenderness does fall short, or else we would have given it an award. I don't feel we should list the two together without stating why, you know, why they're on the same level, so to speak, both recommended.
I think we
books.
Do in those statements. Yeah. I think we do that.
We did discuss this problem a little at the first meeting of the judges, and there were two parents present, and we suggested that if we couldn't give the award to a book like The Snowy Day, partially because of the fact that it is limited insofar as it the award is set up to treat for books which treat intergroup relations, and to some degree the books which treat the intergroup relations in their entirety, goes into the complexity of the relationships, will be the book which is favored. And if a book by its very nature is limited in the amount of complexity it can even deal with, it seems to me it is at a disadvantage in the presentation. However, we thought we could give another award. We might call it an honorable mention, or we might just call it a parallel award for books in the preschool group which did the sort of thing that The Snowy Day does do, and maybe there's an age group in between which can't be compared to a book like A Time for Tenderness. I think this is one thing which we should discuss here tonight as far as standards are concerned, because this is an important thing when a writer sits down to write. Most of them, I think, run aground when in connection with the problems of trying to identify with the point of view of the particular age group he's writing for. There were several books last year which tried to treat the problem of integration in the South. One in particular, which I do remember, William, which was quite bad. And one of the reasons it was bad was because the writer had no idea about the point of view of the age group she was writing for. And I think we should talk a little more about particular standards for each age group: preschool, nursery, picture books, and then the middle years, which I suppose is third grade up, fourth grade up to sixth grade, and then from seventh grade up. And perhaps we could come up with something concrete to recommend for each one of these, for writing in each one of these age, on each one of these age levels, which might help stimulate, I think, writers and publishers to tackle the problem, because it would furnish some sort of guideline.
Don't you feel that on the preschool level, they are doing a much better job? Because if we include a book like this, of course, there are books on Chinese, lovely book on Japanese children. Where is the limit then? I mean, there are books on Japanese, on little African children, on little Chinese children that have come out during the last 2-3 years, the same thing. By implication, you would say these are race relation books. So why?
Well, why this is not exactly. No. I think this is not exactly the same thing.
Oh, you mean
American children are not confronted with the problem of meeting a Chinese child in the same way that he is confronted with meeting a Negro child.
Yeah, maybe not in the East, but don't you have these things in the West?
I don't think that the relationship between the Chinese community in America and the white community in America is as explosive as the relationship between the Negro and the white person. And I think that that's why a book like Snowy Day, which incidentally I would have given the award to personally, I think does a job that is far superior to almost anything one could find today. I think it highlights a group that has to be highlighted in a way that makes them understandable and believable and human. Now, for the white child who reads this book, this is a little boy like any other little boy, and that's the greatest lesson that he can learn at that point.
I have a little reservation on that too. Don't you think that for the 5-6-year-old, they don't have a prejudice, a white child, for him?
Do.
Unless the parents have.
No. Well, we know for a fact that 5-year-old children already are imbued with the prejudices. It is pretty well set by the time the child is 5 years old.
I think it has to be taken in context. We do have an American South where white children have prejudice. Your analogy is poor because if someone in Nazi Germany did a book about a little Jewish boy without preaching, it would have a specific effect. Very different from having a Chinese boy in New York.
Yes.
Well, I may be personal. About the end of February or early March, a Negro child in my group of old boys, children who are 4 and a half, turning 5, brought A Snowy Day to school. And I had never seen the book before and was enchanted as I looked at it and read it to the entire group that day. And they just loved it. And from the reading, they didn't talk about the child in the story, but rather what each one did on a snowy day and made the story very personal to themselves. And then I'm terribly proud of myself because I ran downstairs and showed it to Mrs. Neurath, then had them order some for the bookstall.
I'd like
enjoyed it and it made it. It was just another story about another child.
I'd like to say something to this point. I think that there's no question about it that this book does more than just show you pictures of Negro children. That there is an experience here. And this book says to the white child, here is an experience, you experience this, it's, in this book it's a Negro child, you're a white child, and so on and so forth. That there's a lot of meaning to this in those terms, that all children have this experience, and just like the white children with Bartow, the Puerto Rican child, go through this exciting adventure together. I think in this sense, it is certainly within the consideration of the award. And I think that we've had this interchange between the audience and the judges, and the fact that we have sort of battled back and forth doesn't mean that we have a hard and fast position that we're trying to defend. Everything is going to be on the tape, and it's something that I think we'll want to study and think about. But I still want to get back to this book and make a point in relation to it. And I would not say that the opposite approach to a book like this, which does not have a message, is to preach. I don't think that we should pose those two alternatives. But I think rather we say this is a book which permits children to share common experiences and to feel that to identify with other children, but that if I think we have to say that assuming that we were successful and that all the textbooks had children of all races and all the reading books had little suburban Negro children along with suburban white children, and we succeeded in changing the pictures in the books, we would still be far from our goal, because there is also a conscious sense of difference. And children, as Anne Wolfe said, very young children do have this sense of differences, and we need books that articulate that on their level, and not just books that that have pictures and that this thing is not articulated. I think we still need to articulate it, and I'm not talking about preaching. And this is, so I'm trying to get at this distinction here, and I'm just in order to clarify our own thinking. Yes?
Well, would an age limit define this query?
No, I don't think so, because I think that 4-year-olds, 3-year-olds are conscious of differences. And I think that somewhere in the literature, this kind of experience, delicately, on the level of these children, should be done. And what we're doing tonight is just telling people what they should do. We're not saying how they should do it. But I think that has to be done in our world.
I think we might say a little something about seeing these books through the eyes of the Negro child. Certainly, many Negro children from deprived areas come to school never having seen themselves represented in a book. They might occasionally see themselves in a newspaper, but certainly probably not in a very positive manner. And I feel that I don't know the psychology of this, and perhaps you do know studies that have been made. You know, Kenneth Clark has made studies about dolls, but I don't know whether studies have been made about books per se. But it seems to me that the child must go through a process of either wondering what's wrong with me, I'm not in here, or rejecting books because they don't represent him. And I think it's extremely important for us to emphasize the necessity for books of this kind for this healthy image for the Negro child.
Well, I would like to say a few words about this question of getting back to the kind of books we need. It seems to me that here again we can't pose the present contemporary problem versus the past. TV is teaching our children history at a rate that we can't begin to compete with, and every child has their stereotypes of our past. And I think that while Antelope Singer perhaps was a precious book, yet I think that in literature, in children's literature as in all literature, the minor successes somehow or other help to pave the way, and that the lesser books, if they do achieve something, I can't help but believe that this is going to be very important in the total history of children's literature. But I think that as we, with all the new materials in American history and American folklore and so on, I think that there's a very rich field in intergroup experiences in American history that we just haven't begun to touch. And this is not the sentimental kind of book or anything like that, but you know that many white people on the frontier moved back to the Indian culture and accepted the Indian culture. Sam Houston, for about 10 or 15 years, lived with the Indians, was an Indian. Many different people. Thomas Jefferson, when he's a young man on the frontier, he was very much influenced and moved by seeing the Indian ceremonials. There were many different intercultural experiences, and if we